In terms of Parshas Chukas, there are obviously a lot of very important themes in this week's Parsha, but I wanted to focus on something which is kind of stuck in the middle of the Parsha, which, you know, doesn't get as much attention because the Parsha starts out with Parah Aduma. But if you look in the middle of Parshas Chukas, the Torah talks about what's the famous Nechash Nechoshes, right? The copper snake that Moshe Rabbeinu made. What was the function? What was the purpose of this copper snake? So if you look in the Chumash, so it says that many of Bnei Yisrael were bit by these snakes and scorpions and all these different insects and animals when they were traveling in the Midbar. And basically the Pasuk says they would look up at the copper snake and then somehow they would magically be healed. And many of the Mefarshim, in fact the Gemara itself, is bothered by the question, isn't that like Avodah Zarah, sorcery, witchcraft? What do you mean? You look up at a copper snake and magically you're healed? So Rashi quotes in the Gemara that obviously it doesn't mean that somehow the copper snake itself had any sort of healing properties, but rather you would look up, you know, towards Shemayim, and then as a result, after looking at Shemayim, you would daven to Hashem, and then as a result, you would be healed. In fact, it's very, very similar. It's very reminiscent of something that we read about in the end of Parshas Bishalach, right, during the war of Amalek, when Amalek is fighting against Bnei Yisrael. So when it says that Aaron and Hur would lift up Moshe's hands. So again, it wasn't that Moshe's hands being up ultimately meant that Bnei Yisrael would win. It meant that they would see his hands and they would look up towards Shemayim and then they would daven and then as a result, they would be victorious. Okay, so Rashi in Chukas, right, mentions the fact. He notes, why did Moshe specifically make this snake, this snake-like thing, out of copper? How did Moshe know? Why couldn't it be a metal snake? Why couldn't it be a wooden snake? How did Moshe know that it had to specifically be a copper snake? So Rashi says, because the word nachash and the word nechoshes are the same shoresh, right? Nechash, nechoshes. It's the same shoresh. Rashi coins the phrase, lashon nofel al lashon. That it's almost like the two words in English, we call that cognate. When two words come from the same etymology, they're the same shoresh, we call those words, you know, they're cognate with one another. They come from the same root. So the question, of course, is like, who cares? Like, why does it matter that the word nechash and nechoshes come from the same shoresh? So what? Okay, so they come from the same shoresh. Big deal. So why does that mean that you dafka have to make a copper snake and not anything else? So I think that this actually relates to something which appears actually in the very beginning of the Torah in Parshas Bereishis, when the Torah talks about the reason for the name Isha. Why is it that women are referred to as Isha? So the Torah says in Parshas Bereishis, Ki me ish lukachazos, right? Isha and Ish are also cognate. They're also similar words, right? They have a similar shoresh. So how do we know that women are called Isha? Because the Pasuk says, Ki me ish lukachazos. They come from man. They come from Adam's rib. So Rashi there also in Parshas Bereishis makes the exact same comment that he does here, obviously in a different context, but the same idea, where he says that Lasho nofel al Lasho. First of all, he says the same idea that you see again that the words are building off of each other, but Rashi adds in another point in Bereishis that he does not mention here in Chukas, which is that Rashi says you see from that pasuk in Parshas Bereishis that says that Isha comes from Ish, you see from here that the world was built with Lashon HaKodesh. How do we see that? Because the name, the term Isha and Ish are related, so built into the original language that we have in the world is this relationship between the word Isha and Ish. Even in English, by the way, man and woman, I mean, they're not exactly the same word, but some of the letters are somewhat similar. So the idea of Lashon Nofel HaLashon, in that context, Rashi says, you see from here that the world was created in Lashon HaKodesh. There is a famous comment of the Ramban in the beginning of Parshas Kisisa, where the Ramban discusses, why is it that what we usually refer to as the Hebrew language, why is that called Lashon HaKodesh, right? What exactly is so holy about the language? Now, obviously, you could just say, because it's the language of the Torah, and the Torah is holy. I mean, that would be an obvious answer. But the Ramban says it's much more than that. The Ramban says the reason why we refer to Hebrew as, quote-unquote, Lashon HaKodesh, is because the very essence of the language itself is holy. For example, the Ramban says that certain words that we would use, let's say, in English or in any other language, to refer, for example, to certain parts of the body, let's say, you know, or various acts that involve, you know, sexual intercourse, you know, between a man and a woman, or parts of the body that are used for using the bathroom, or acts of going to the bathroom, or having relations, those kinds of activities. So the Ramban points out that if you look in Tanakh, they're always what we call euphemisms, right? Right. The psukim in Tanakh are never so explicit. They always kind of coat things in a much less explicit language. Why is that the case? The Ramban says, because there are no words in this language, in Lashon HaKodesh, for those types of activities or those body parts, and that is kind of reflective of the fact that it's Lashon HaKodesh. It's literally a holy language, because there are no words, there are no literal words to refer to those parts of the, to refer to those parts of the body. Also, you should know, by the way, that the Rambam in Pirkei Avos, in his commentary on Pirkei Avos, also points out that when the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos talks about have a zahir b'mitzvah kala kivachamur, the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos tells us that a person has to be just as careful when they're doing a quote-unquote light mitzvah, an easy mitzvah, as they would about a more serious one. The example that the Rambam gives of a light mitzvah is the mitzvah to speak in Lashon HaKodesh. So the Rambam assumes that speaking in what we call Hebrew, or what we're referring to now as Lashon HaKodesh, is actually a mitzvah. And in fact, just to give you a little bit of historical context, there was a letter that was written by Rav Elia Meir Bluch. Rav Elia Meir Bluch was the head of the Telz Yeshiva in Cleveland, and when the Zionist movement was gaining steam, and when the State of Israel was about to be founded, so there was obviously a lot of tension, a lot of political rift. And one of the things that Rav Elia Meir Bluch in this letter was almost bemoaning, he was bemoaning the fact that people today are not fulfilling mitzvos in the same way that they were, and he says that there's a lack, or there's a little bit of what's called like a rifyon. People are not as careful about the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael, about learning Tanakh, and about speaking in Lashon HaKodesh, which he claims, again, based on this Rambam, is a mitzvah. So the idea, I think, that we see from here, from Parshas Chukas and Parshas Bereishis, really, in general, is that the idea is the world itself was founded on Lashon HaKodesh, which means that maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling us a lesson that we need to think in terms of Kedusha. We need to express ourselves in a holy fashion, because Hashem himself created the world in this holy fashion.